وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين أجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف وجعلنا من أعوانه وأنصاره. We ended. We ended the last discussion with some emphasis on the fact that we are not just this physical body. There is a greater world inside us, and some people have called this, according to a poem which is attributed to Imam Ali, and also according to a very established terminology in mysticism, they call the reality of human beings, which is the spirit, they call it Al-Alam Al-Akbar, which means the greater or the greatest world. Today I will talk about this aspect of our reality a little bit more. Of course, our time is very limited and we have just two more sessions. With this would be three. So we cannot go into details. But a little bit I wanted to expand on this idea of spirit. Some people who are affected by the materialistic thought, like for example positivism, emphasis in philosophy, they have the idea that nothing can be accepted except those things which are verified by experimentation. For example, if you can measure something, if you can touch something, if you can smell something, then you can accept it. But something which is not material, something which cannot be understood by our perception, you know, like seeing or listening or touching or smelling or taste, they don't accept. This includes God. Some of them, they don't accept God. As you have heard, you know, that one of them said, I don't believe in God because when I go to operation theater, he was a surgeon, I don't see God. There is no God under my experimentation. And they don't also believe in spirit. And they say that we are only our body, nothing else. But human body is a very sophisticated form of matter, a form of physical mass. And this is why we can understand, we can have knowledge, but it's just a physical matter. And Marxists also later adopted this idea, and they denied spirit as something separate from body. But from the beginning of history of philosophy up to now, there have always been great philosophers who had the idea that human being is built up from two things, body and soul. And soul is the main aspect of our reality. Just 2 weeks ago, I was in Austria and I was invited to present a paper on soul from Islamic perspective, of course, philosophical perspective. And it was interesting that many people were interested in knowing more about Islamic philosophy, especially about soul. Very briefly, I mentioned some of the arguments that Muslim philosophers have mentioned about the existence of soul as an independent reality in essence from body. And then I mentioned also some mystical experience, so that we all become, inshallah, aware that we are not just our body, we are more than anything else our souls and our spirits. First of all, you should know what does soul mean. Soul, according to metaphysicians, is a substance which is independent from matter in a sense, but in act depends on matter. To make it very simple, we are not like angels that do not have any physical body. When we are born, we are born also with a body, and it's only through this body that we can perform our acts. Okay? Can you move something without using your hand? No. Can you see something without using your eyes? No. Can you listen to something without using your ears? No. So your soul needs your body so that it can perform its acts or her acts. Okay? But in a sense, the soul is immaterial. It's incorporeal substance. And this is what I am going to, inshallah, prove today, inshallah. One of the arguments which is very famous is by Ibn Sina or Avicenna, and this is called the argument of the suspended man. The suspended man, Rajul Mu'allaq. He says, imagine that you are suddenly created. Okay? You are suddenly created, but you are not created as a new child, as a mature person who is physically, mentally healthy. Okay? So imagine that you are just now born. And imagine that you are put in a place which is dark. There is nothing that preoccupies your mind because of, for example, seeing something. It's also not very cold, not very warm, exactly the same temperature as your body. So you don't feel warmth or cold. Your hands and feet are open so that they don't touch your body or each other. The fingers are open. Okay? You are not very hungry or very full. You are not very thirsty or very full. So that there is no signal coming from your body or physical world around you. Okay? Imagine such a person or yourself in such a situation. He says, even in that situation, you will have your understanding of yourself. It's not that you don't have any attention about yourself, don't have any awareness about yourself. Still, you feel yourself as a reality. There is no physical or material encounter with the environment. And you don't feel your body. Okay? Because the only time you feel your body is when there are some impulse, some signals coming. Yeah? So, he says, even in such a situation, everyone has an awareness about himself or herself. And this shows that we are not only body. We are something else. Of course, Ibn Sina himself says that this is not a logical demonstration, because some people may say, we have never been put in that situation, it's just imaginary. But he says, I don't want to use this as demonstration, I want you yourself to reflect, to meditate, and go inside yourself. And for most of people, if they can imagine this, it would be very clear and very easy that we have some understanding of ourselves which is different from our body. But there are other arguments. Another argument. Our body is changing. Is it true or not? Body is changing. It's said that in every 6 years, all our cells, except the cells which are for the nervous system, all cells are changed in 6 years. In a matter of 6 years, it's totally different body. Someone who looks very young, he becomes very old, and all the cells are different. A person who is fat becomes thin, thin becomes fat, and all cells are different. But what about the reality of people? Does that change? If someone has done a crime 30 years ago, would we consider this a different person because the body has changed? Or we would say that this is the same person? It's the same person. Even if 100 years pass, we say this is the same person. So what is the source for bringing unity and identity to every human person? Another argument is argument from simplicity. Each of you has some understanding of herself or himself. Now my question is, can you, please be very careful, can you divide yourself into physical dimensions? Can you say north of my reality or south of my reality or east of my reality or west or front or back? If we were just body, so we could say yes, top of my body, bottom of my body, east, west, yeah, or right, left. Every physical mass is divisible, and at least, even if it is very small, at least you can point to different aspects of it. Even if you physically cannot divide it because it's very, very small, still you can say the right side of it, or the left side of it, or top of it, or bottom of it. Okay? But what about your reality? You cannot divide it. It's one reality. Even if you lose some parts of your body, suppose, God forbid, there is an accident, then your hands are cut off. Will you feel that part of your reality is taken away, so you are no longer a complete person, or you are the same person? Although you suffer, but you are the same person. That reality is simple. That reality cannot be taken, you know, away, wholly or partly. Okay, is it clear? If my hand is cut off, my body is losing something, but not my reality. I am the same person. If you cut my hands and feet, I'm still the same person. Okay? So this is also another important argument. The other argument, there are many, many arguments, is argument from knowledge. This is very important, and Allama Tabatabai and some other philosophers mentioned this argument. Our knowledge has some qualities which do not fit into physical world. For example, our knowledge is possible to remain always unchanged. Okay? If you have a knowledge about a person, for example, you have a friend, you know him very well, then you don't see that person for 30, 40 years. Okay? After 30, 40 years, when you see him or her, you say, this is the same person. Now here there are two points. First of all, it shows that this person, despite the change of his body, is the same person, which we mentioned before. But another point, which I'm now discussing, is that your knowledge has remained the same. Because if your knowledge itself was going through changes, undergoing changes, so how could you say after 40 years that this is the same person? It means that you have had some knowledge which has remained unchanged, and then you can compare that person and check that person against this knowledge, and you say this is the same person. Okay? So your knowledge is not changing, but every physical thing is changing. Your knowledge is always remaining. If we say that, for example, I was born in such a date, in such a place, this knowledge remains always true, and I always can have this knowledge, even if I am alive for 1,000 years, 1,000 years or more than that, the knowledge remains unchanged. So this cannot be a physical matter. So if knowledge is not physical, so the soul which has the knowledge cannot be physical. Okay, is it clear? And also the knowledge cannot be divided. The knowledge is simple. All these qualities of knowledge show that the knowledge is not physical, so the soul is not physical. Anyway, this is a very important discussion, and some people have said that this is the most important part of Islamic philosophy, the discussion about soul. Some people have said, for example, in Routledge Encyclopedia of Philosophy, there is a good article about soul in Islamic philosophy by Shams Enaki. And he says that the discussion about soul is very significant, and some people have said it's the most important part of Islamic philosophy. And people like Aristotle also had very similar ideas, but Muslim philosophers of course developed the ideas. But something from early time, ancient time, up to now, always have been very much popular among philosophers, not all of them, but among many philosophers, is that human being is not just body. We have body and we have soul, or you can say spirit, and our main reality is built by our soul. But as I said, soul needs body. Okay? Soul needs body for its act, for her act. But now look how beautiful it is that now you can use philosophy to back up what we said before. They say when soul develops, it's her reliance on body decreases, and finally soul reaches a state in which we no longer need body to exercise her power. If my soul is strong enough, not only I can move things by my hands, I can also move things to which I don't have physical access. I can move things in other part of the room or in other part of the world. If my soul is strong enough, I just don't need to see you by my eye. Even if you are behind me, I can see you. I can see people in other parts of the world. Why? Because the soul is in a sense incorporeal, immaterial. Just temporarily uses our body as her vehicle, as her means, instrument. Okay? And gradually soul becomes stronger and then can exist without this physical body. maybe with more abstract bodies. This happens after death for everyone. Have you noticed, you know, that for example, if someone dies, when we want to do talqin, we do it in Arabic. Yeah? But this person maybe never knew any Arabic when he was living, when he was in this body. But why when he dies, he understands Arabic? Because this is the limit of this world. And when the soul gets rid of its body, his knowledge will be more. Okay? But you can have the same experience when you are still living. When you are still living. In the book Self-Knowledge, I have mentioned few stories, which are true stories. One of them is from a great scholar who died few years ago in Mashhad. He was called Sayyid Jalaluddin Ashtiani. He has many books, and he has also edited many philosophical works. In an interview with one of the Iranian journals, I gave the reference number and it's in the book, he said, once in my dream, I learned some poem from Maulavi, from Rumi, and that was new to me. He said, in my dream, I learned some poem. After I woke up, I looked for this poem because it looked new to me. I didn't find in my copy of Rumi works. Then I searched other copies. Sometimes, you know, there are alternative copies. There may be some alterations or, you know, additions. He said, I didn't find in any copies of Rumi works available in Iran. And then he said, after a while, I knew of a copy which was kept by some Western scholar, because some of our, you know, manuscripts are, you know, kept there. And in that copy, I found this piece of poem from Rumi. This is very magnificent, because this piece of poem was not available in any of copies of Rumi that he had access or was available in libraries inside Iran. And only someone else had a copy of this that included this. So you cannot say that his knowledge of this poem was just because he had this in memory and he had forgotten, but this was not available. And you cannot say also maybe this was his own imagination, because this was written in a copy which belongs to some centuries back. Okay? So it cannot be his own imagination, his own fabrication, and it could not be also something that he had in memory. What does this show? Doesn't this show that our soul can have access to another world, and through this access can get some knowledge which is not through our perception, through seeing or listening or tasting? A much more striking example is the example of brother of Allama Tabatabai. You know Allama Tabatabai, Sayyid Muhammad Hussain Tabatabai, the author of Al-Mizan and many other books. He had a brother who was known as Elahi, and they studied together in Najaf. He was very learned and very pious man. When Allama Tabatabai was writing Al-Mizan, his brother was not living in Qom, he was living in Tabriz. Once he sent him a message, maybe a letter, I don't remember if it was a letter or by someone, anyway, he sent him a message that I had encounter with our father who had died long time ago, and he said, I am not happy with Muhammad Hussein because he has not made me share the reward of Al-Mizan, writing Al-Mizan. And Allama Tabatabai, when he received this message, was very sad. But he said, the reason is that I didn't think about reward at all. I didn't think that my work is valuable. Imagine he has written maybe up to now the best tafsir of Quran in 20 volumes in Arabic, in 40 volumes. But he thought his work is useless or not valuable, so that he could think about reward. This is the humbleness of this man. But then in his intention, he said, okay, if there is sawab, I dedicate this to my father or parents. And he didn't mention this to his brother, he didn't send any message. After a while, he received second message from his brother that again I saw our father, and he said, I am happy with Muhammad Hussein. Allama Tabatabai and his brother, they had a very pious spiritual instructor, which is Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Qazi Tabatabai, who was also the master of Ayatollah Bahjat and people like him. This is very significant. This is what I heard myself from Ayatollah Hassan Zadeh Amuli. He said, long time ago, when I was much younger, in summer I used to go to my own city, Amul, northern Iran, and every day I used to have several lessons, several lectures for students, for people. So normally midday when I was going home, I was very tired after having some lectures in summer, you know, which is hot. So I wanted to have some rest. One day, when I wanted to have rest, the children made lots of noise. And they didn't listen, you know, to the advice, you know, please be quiet, you know, your father is, you know, sleeping. So he said, I became angry with them and shouted at them. Then he said, I felt bad in my heart. I felt my heart is dark. So I went outside and bought some sweets for them, brought them some candy, so that they become happy. But still, I felt darkness is there. And look, you know, how these people are careful about their behavior. So he said, I decided to go and visit the brother of Allama Tabatabai. So from Amul, he took car or bus to Tehran. Then from Tehran to the city in which the brother of Allama Tabatabai was living. So that explained to him what happened. And he said, when I reached there, I knocked the door and Marhum Ilahi came out. Without telling him what happened, he said,